Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is brought to you by Momentous. Get your hands on the cleanest and safest supplements on the market. Momentous has been part of my training regimen for these past couple months now. It is NSF certified for sport, which means that you can trust and believe that what's on the label matches up with what's actually in the package. And that's an awesome peace of mind to have if you're an athlete. Momentous works with elite athletes in running, cycling, rock climbing, skiers, and even NFL football players. With running specifically, they've been working with Ben True, Emma Coburn, Dana Giordano, Emma Bates, Molly Seidel, and so many other stars. But at the same time, they're also delivering results when it comes to working with recreational runners and people like me that just want to get the best out of themselves. So I want to bring your attention to their new Momentous Omega-3 Fish Oil Supplement. It's made to improve your heart health. It improves recovery by fighting long-term inflammation. It's essential for brain development and function. And it improves bone and joint health since it's been shown to improve range of motion. So try it for yourself. Sidious Mag podcast listeners will generously receive 20% off their first order of Momentous by using promo code Sidious at checkout when they visit livemomentous.com. That's Sidious at checkout for 20% of your first order of plant protein, whey protein, sleep formula, whatever you need, they've got it. Sidious at checkout, C-I-T-I-U-S, live it, get it, prove it, livemomentous.com. I'm also super excited to announce a new sponsor coming on board to support Sidious Mag. Welcome, Whoop. Whoop is a fitness wearable that provides 24/7 personalized insights around your sleep, recovery, and daily activity. Whether you're looking to break 5 minutes in the mile, like me, or just looking to run your first 5K, Whoop has helped runners of all backgrounds train smarter and recover faster so they can get to the start line healthy and hit new PRs. I've been wearing my Whoop since December 2019, which is so long that now I've got tan lines on both my wrists to show my love for it. On one side, I've got my GPS watch, and then on the other, I've got my Whoop, which weighs absolutely nothing. And it really isn't about getting splits and mileage, but it's about the other 23 hours of the day when your body is getting ready for that next run. Another way that it's completely different from your standard GPS watch is that every day it gives you a personalized recovery score based on things like your resting heart rate, sleep, and respiratory rate so that you know if you're actually going to be able to crush those, you know, mile repeats on the track and if the legs are feeling good. The app also has built-in features like a strain coach so you can see how hard you're pushing your body every day and set goals based on your body's recovery. Overtraining and injuries are huge problems for every runner, but Whoop can help you reduce those risks by listening to those underlying factors affecting your performance. The sleep coach, which I love, provides you with personalized sleep recommendations based on your previous night's sleep and how active you were over the course of the day. And you should know by now that a runner's best way to combat injury is by getting quality sleep. So for me, it's done wonders when it tells me, hey, get to bed by this time and wake up by this time and maybe you'll be fully recovered for your workout. And as it gathers more and more data, it really helps tailor all of that information for your body's needs so that you can perform better. So let's get to it. Whoop is offering our listeners 15% off with the code Sidious at checkout. All you got to do is visit Whoop. That's WHOOP.com and enter Sidious at checkout to save 15% off. Sleep better, recover faster, and run faster. Get to that starting line healthy with Whoop. My guest for today's episode is Sarah Vaughn. She's a 1500-meter specialist dipping her toes back in the steeplechase very soon. You can catch her in action at this weekend's Trials of Miles Kansas City qualifier on May 1st. The meet will be streamed live on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel for free with action starting at 3 p.m. Central Time and the main event getting underway at 6:45. Sarah will be in the steeplechase for the first time since 2014. Since then, she's made the U.S. national team for the 2017 World Championships as a mother of three back then. Then she's added another baby along the way and, while pregnant, announced her plans to chase the U.S. Olympic trials for Tokyo back in April 2019. She's an ambassador for And Mother, a brand that was co-founded by Alicia Montaño, and strives to break the barriers that limit a woman's choice to pursue and thrive in both career and motherhood. There's no better person to represent that company than Sarah. So learn more about her here. So without further ado, here is Sarah Vaughn.
All right, now we welcome on Sarah Vaughn to the podcast. I think you and I exchanged messages like a while back to do this, but then I probably just got sidetracked. But I'm so glad we get to sit down because we're almost, I guess, like less than 2 weeks away from the Kansas City qualifier. And I got to call your 1500 race at the Texas qualifier. So back behind the mic for another one. And this time around, you're steepling, right? And this is your first steeplechase race since 2014, I think?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. When I had my third daughter, when Cassidy was born in 2015, I never came back to the steeplechase, so I guess it was 2014.
Wow, and so like, is this like, I would think it would be the most rust buster race ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big gap. I mean, honestly, like, why I never returned to it is the steeplechase is kind of hard on a postpartum body. So, you know, like your pelvis and your hips are already kind of iffy. And it's just like the extra training. I never gave it time or it takes a little extra time to train for the steeple with all the extra drills and everything. So it just didn't make sense. But this year, like I'm a year and a half removed from the most recent pregnancy. I feel really strong. I feel really stable. The training has been more strength-based, like 5K based. And I'm still like, I hopped over some hurdles for the first time like 10 days ago maybe, and I mean my form was okay, I felt good, my times were good, so we were like, let's go for it. And I ordered a water barrier from Sweden that shipped over a couple weeks ago. My kids think it's a balance beam, but it's in the backyard, and yeah, practice a few hops over that too, so it's kind of clicking.
Yeah. So what made you want to return to sort of the event? Like, was it just something that you felt like you had unfinished business in?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, we were kind of training for the 5K, and for whatever reason, it's just not my favorite event. I don't get excited for it. I kind of had to like really force myself into wanting to race one. And when I thought about the 3K distance, that seems a lot more palatable to me as a middle distance runner, and hopping over things, like I like being athletic. I enjoy switching it up in training. And so that just, I just kind of missed the steeplechase. And also there's this kind of cool thing. I haven't really like announced it yet or anything, but why not? I'm pretty sure that the Masters world record is 9:33 for the 35 and over age group. And I'll be 35 on May 16th. So after the Kansas City qualifier, but this season still. So if I could get in the 9:30s or 9:40s in Kansas City, I think that would be like a good stepping stone to go after that like world record later this summer.
That's awesome. I totally wasn't aware of it. And it's sort of like what it seems like you've just found so many different ways of making the sport fun and like at the same time continuing to challenge yourself. So yeah, I mean, like sometimes you just have to dig for sort of, if it's not a personal best, you set that bar even further by finding these kind of obscure records, but it's still a record.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of goofy and nobody probably really cares. But when I was looking, I was like, oh, that's achievable. Like a lot of the Masters world records in that 35 age category are super hard. I think it's, you know, Regina Jacobs ran like 4:57 or something in the 3:57 in the 1500. So they're super fast still. And I'm not giving up on the 1500. I still feel like I could PR. I've had some awesome workouts that indicate that I'm better than I was when I ran 404, but at the same time, like it's an Olympic year and all the focus is on that. But then when we saw this other thing on paper, my husband and I were both like, wow, that would be kind of cool to be a world record holder for however long. And it's kind of an aside, but, I get excited. Like it keeps me excited, like you said. So I'm looking forward to chasing that.
We're recording this in the middle of a Tuesday. I'm kind of curious as to like, what's your day been like so far before this? And like, what do you have coming up after, you know, this interview? Because you just juggle so much and it's sort of like, you've got training, you've got your family, you've got to recover from some of these workouts. You've got your full-time, you know, real estate job. It's sort of similar to like when people ask me, it's like, you're producing all these podcasts and doing all this writing. It's like, where do you find the time to sleep? And I'm like, yeah, that's actually the hard part.
Right. Yeah. That's usually the first thing that falls off my plate too, is taking care of myself and sleep and recovery. That part's always tricky. So to address that, I think, so my husband's been coaching me since like 2017, and something that we've done that isn't entirely unique to us, but it was like really helpful to me to make the change, is to just have more rest days in between workouts. So we don't always work out Tuesday, Friday, long run, Sunday, repeat. We are on like a 9 or 10 day schedule where I take 2 days rest between every workout before and after a long run, sometimes a third day if the long run was 20 miles and super hard or whatever I need. And just that flexibility, an extra day, that kind of takes care of the recovery piece for me. My day to day was getting up, getting the kids to the school bus. They get on the bus at 7:15, the two middle ones. You know, so lunch is packed, breakfast, the whole crazy morning routine. I'm not admittedly like an early bird. I don't love early mornings. So a lot of times Brent does the morning routine and lets me sleep in a little bit. So today that was sort of what was happening, because I'm racing tomorrow actually at the Drake Road Mile, Grand Blue Mile. So yeah, I got them off to school. And then like this morning after a super busy real estate weekend, where I worked like 10 and 12 hour days on Saturday and Sunday, I just had like a ton of paperwork to catch up on. So checking in with clients, ordering appraisals, inspections, title work, like just all the boring ins and outs, computer work stuff of a real estate career. And then I did my like pre-race workout at probably about 9:30 or 10. I went on the treadmill because we got 12 inches of snow yesterday. So that kind of stinks. I would have normally been on the track, like doing some strides and drills and stuff, but just went to the basement and got on the treadmill and got that done. And yeah, and then when we're done, I've got to check in with a few more clients, and then I'm going to head to the airport. Wow. I get out of carpool this afternoon because I get to go race. So normally I take Wednesdays off too, like of real estate. Since I work on Saturdays and Sundays, I try to take Wednesdays off. So yeah. So tomorrow will hopefully be pretty low key work wise so I can focus.
It's been a while since like Brent competed. And so it's like, how long have you sort of had this balance to the day to day? And like, what was that like to strike? Because I kind of do sort of think when, you know, when a couple is still competing, and then they're, you know, if both of them are still competing and raising a family, that's got even more to juggle. So you've kind of like seen Brent also kind of like step up in his role as well.
Totally. I mean, our like dynamic as a couple and who's running we're focused on has done a 180. I mean, we made our lives around his running career post-collegiately. He had the big contract with Nike. We moved to Portland for a couple of years. Like we did everything. And yeah, I was trying to race and run also, but really most of our big decisions were based on his racing schedule, his training career. You know, when we lived in Portland, he was like in the altitude tent 16 hours a day and just like, you know, full-time job. Yeah. And you're right. As we moved back to Colorado and as he sort of shifted out of competitive running and I still felt like I had more to give, we tried it different ways in Boulder. Like I tried joining the team here. I just think with my schedule and other obligations, I felt like I was always letting the team down and letting the coach down. And Brent like also has his own ideas about what training should look like for me. I mean, he knows me pretty intimately as an athlete and he knows like what I respond to, not to mention if I was up all night with a kid with an ear infection or, you know, whatever it is, like he can incorporate that into my training too. So it made so much sense when he took over training me. But you're right, like it was a huge shift because we focused on his stuff so much. And then now it was kind of my turn, later in my career. And having him completely on board in that support role is different for him, but he's really good at it.
Yeah, I want to run through sort of like the different sort of stages of your career so far. But like to the outside observer looking in, what they'll notice is sort of just like a lot of moving parts where it's like coached by, you know, such and such person for this long and then this long. And it's not, I guess, like what you just kind of made clear to me who might see like all these, you know, bouncing around. It's not so like that the coaching philosophy and like the training wasn't working for you. It's just sort of like, this schedule that you needed was like, it just wasn't the best sort of fit. So like, I guess you kind of mentioned a little bit of what Brent has you doing, but what does that training cycle sort of look like? You said 9 or 10 days?
Yeah, we do 9 or 10 days. So usually 9. And then like, well, but last week was different too. We're always kind of changing it, but generally in the like build up base phase all fall, all winter, it was a 9-day schedule where it's like a long interval workout or tempo, come back 3 days later doing something shorter and faster, and then 3 days later a long run, and then just repeat that 9-day schedule. So yeah, so for me, we can kind of time that too based around when I have busy work schedule or kid obligations or whatever it is, we can kind of work and dance around that. So that's super helpful.
I was also kind of curious, sort of when you think of your sort of career thus far, do you also kind of see it in, you know, chapters of like baby one, baby two, baby three?
Yeah, okay. Totally.
Because I totally. That's well, kind of like how I had in my notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had Olympic cycle babies more or less, you know, where we had a baby every 4 to 5 years. So yeah, first baby in college, yeah, like that comeback was its own thing and its own little mini career. And then when we had the second baby, like coming back from that, was when we made a lot of big changes for Brent's career. We were out of college. He was training professionally. We went to Portland. He joined Jerry's group. I was never officially sponsored by Nike, so I could never officially be coached by them. So I had this awesome other coach out there and kind of jumped back and forth between groups. And then another big change came and we moved back to Colorado, had a third baby. I tried this other team here because I didn't like training alone. I really miss being part of a team, but like I pointed out earlier, just logistically, I just felt like I was letting them down all the time. Like I couldn't come to practice some days. I would skip things. I would do things on my own. I would be doubling at like 9 PM. And, it was like a point of frustration for that coach and maybe some of those teammates and also for me. And it was just like another person to check in with, another thing to schedule. And as much as I miss being a part of a team, like that environment wasn't serving me. Yeah. And then the fourth baby, like I felt like we got it down now, like no coaching changes ever again. We're not moving ever again. We moved houses like 10 times in the first 11 years we were married or something stupid like that. So we're like very settled. And I think also like one thing that I like to point out, just like since we're talking about training in general and like my whole career, each time I had a baby, I had like almost 18 months off of intense training, like these big breaks, like 9 months of being pregnant. And then also like another 9 months of coming back. And I think that, I've just been able to like add those years on the end of my career. Yeah. Like they've kind of saved and added life to this long career I've had. I don't feel tired. I don't feel beat up. I feel like I have more to give. And I think I have to credit that to these big, long pregnancy breaks that I've had.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I was going to bring up sort of is like on paper, your age says one thing and like how long sort of like it, looking at just the statistics of like how long you've been at it in the actual like professional scene. It's like you can take it for the number of years, but at the same time, the amount of time that you've taken off adds up. And if you, yeah, were to sort of like, you know, kind of subtract from what the age is on paper, you're probably like in the prime of your career right now.
Exactly. I know. I'm basically like 29. This is forevermore. No, 29 this year. And it's great. Yeah. I mean, and I just did that. I just did an inside tracker blood draw and it said my inner age was 24. So I don't know what
really?
I'm doing, but I'm just the perfect track age.
So kind of, I want to go back to 2006. First daughter, Kiki, was born when you and Brent were at Colorado. So can you take me back to like when that was taking place? Like what kind of support systems did you have like around you at the time? And like from your observations of where, you know, things are at sort of now, like have things gotten better or like changed much in the 15 years? Which is kind of wild to think it's 15
years. I have a 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so wild. And I was just talking to my friend Katie Mackey Katie Follett about this because she just announced she's pregnant. She's remarried and she's on this beautiful path and her sponsor is supporting her. And I just like, we were talking about it and I just think it's such a beautiful thing that like it's the expectation now that Brooks is going, of course they're going to continue to support her. And other women who have, you know, had babies in the past year that are continuing to get support. I love how that's the norm now and it should be moving forward. In 2006, when I was in college and I had a baby, yeah, I could think of like one woman, Shane Culpepper, had babies during her career and was able to continue forward. But I don't think that she had like the same type of support that women are getting now. She just kind of powered through it. And she was really like the only example that I knew or could think of at the time. And in the NCAA, I mean, yeah, it was pretty rare to have a kid in college, and I don't really recommend it, but we were, that was the position I was in, and there was no pregnancy red shirt. There was no like way to safeguard my eligibility. Actually, the NCAA passed a bylaw in 2007, introducing a pregnancy red shirt. So the year after I had my daughter. So yeah, to like think about that then in 2006 to now, yeah, it's changed completely.
I think it was in some article that I dug up from around like 2012. It said that you got dropped by Adidas after your second kid. Then you joined like the Bowerman Athletic Club at the time. And when you started to describe what the setup was like, it's still not one of these, you know, big sponsorship deals. And you know, you described it as they gave you shoes and like $500 or something like that.
They literally did, yeah.
It kind of brings to mind sort of like the big hot topic sort of that I feel like with track, it's like every sort of year, it's like, is the sponsorship sort of model like broken? Because you made a post even recently too, where you said that like, you've gotten to this point now where you've had to separate money from performance. And we're also starting to see just like an influx of new brands sort of, and different ways that athletes are going about things where it's no longer sort of like, I'm going to sign away, you know, my whole entire kit and the rights to my eyewear, you know, my wrist for watches and that kind of stuff to one sponsor. Like now the doors are kind of open where you can be a little bit more flexible to things. So where is your head sort of at in sort of like assessing like the sponsorship situation within the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot of progress. I always thought that we should kind of more model it after like triathletes, where they have multiple sponsors and jersey spaces, you know, like there's multiple jersey space and things aren't just dominated by the old school, you know, running shoe brands. I mean, I don't know. And I can't help but think like, oh, what would have happened if my career had taken that path? Maybe I'd feel differently now, because if I had support the whole way through or whatever, that would be cool. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that model if you're lucky enough to be one of those. But I do think that it's important for athletes to consider like, yeah, different revenue streams. I mean, I'm still trying to get my finger on the pulse of like what even lands you a sponsorship. Like 15 years into this, I don't know if it's potential, if it's past times, if it's making teams, if it's Instagram followers, if it's marketability, whatever that means, if it's age, like I still can't figure it out. So I just think it's important for athletes to like make their own way, make their own brand, use their voice. And I don't know, hopefully you find a brand that aligns with you, which is kind of what I've done with Ann Mother and Caden Shea.
Yeah. Can you share, I guess, to some of the listeners, I guess, like how that sort of came about and, you know, what sort of the expectation is like from what the sponsor wants to see out of like the athlete and like the partnership? Because it's like I think I kind of mentioned before, it's changing.
Yeah, it's totally changing. I mean, like referencing back to 2012 when I was dropped by Adidas on a gear sponsorship, they told me I didn't fit their image. And that's what I was told even in 2017, after I made the team. I had run for Brooks ID for several years. And they kind of told me the same thing. Like I just didn't fit the image they were going for. And I have some pretty thick skin about that. And I understand it's a business and, you know, whatever. I don't fit what they had in mind for marketing those years. But like with Ann Mother, I voice the same things. Like their motto like I'm an ambassador and I fit the description of what they were looking for, and vice versa. At this point in my career, I'm not going to just endorse anybody for any reason. It's got to align with my personal beliefs. And what Ann Mother does, like breaking down barriers for moms to re-enter the workforce after having a baby or whatever, in all areas, not just athletics. I'm just really glad that like they align with what I believe, and vice versa, and that it's more of a partnership than a sponsorship. And the expectations like are pretty minimal. They just want me to use my platform, and they want to boost my platform and let me use my voice, which I think is great.
Yeah, because it's still like you kind of even just mentioned it. It was so mind-blowing that in 2017, you make the world championship team and everyone is quick to sort of like float around just how awesome and beautiful the story is. You know, mother, you know, comes back from pregnancy, makes her first outdoor world championship team, is going on, you know, in the interview, I think like right afterwards, you like shouted out your daughters who were watching at home. And you've shared along on social media every single step of the way. So it is a real big head scratcher to like, wait, why? As much as we want to like tout this story for how great it is, why isn't a sponsor jumping on it?
It's a mystery, Chris. I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I just, a part of it, I think, is not only like, I've always had a kid. It's always at least a kid my whole running career. So that part has never changed for me. So I have to imagine that that's probably part of it. Like I'm not the image that's going to sell a bunch of shoes to some high school kids. But at the same time, like 20, 30 year old moms also run and buy shoes. Like that's their main consumer, I would think, but I'm not a marketing guru. But the other flip side of it is like we were just talking about, I'm 34 and there's some serious ageism in this sport. And I guess it's allowed because I was just reading an article about Noah Drotty getting dropped and they interviewed, I don't remember, a CEO of a shoe company. And he basically said, yeah, if you have the same credentials on paper as someone 10 years younger than you, you're not getting the sponsorship. And that was published in Outside Magazine. So I guess ageism is just okay in our sport. And that's the problem.
Because on the flip side, then there's also sort of like with the real estate job that you've got, very similarly, I guess, like Hira D'Amato in her sort of like the, you know, sponsorship conversation that was taking place, everyone very quickly like, awesome, feel good story, amazing, like someone sign her and like let's get her a contract. The secondary sort of like talking point around that was like a lot of people wondering, it's like, well, does she even want sort of that sort of sponsorship, or does she even like need it? So from your perspective, I guess, like, is that also sort of like a component to it too?
Well, definitely. I mean, I've been approached by a few companies who have offered me X, Y, and Z, and it hasn't made sense, like financially or logistically, like if it comes with too many obligations or, you know, I'm not going to add extra speaking engagements or whatever for a minimal amount of money. And I'm not going to align myself and marry myself to a brand if like it has to make sense for me, to your point. So yeah, like I am making money outside of the sport. And in order to take on a sponsorship, it's not like it would have to equal that, but I do have to like figure out a balance of where it would be worth it for me to align myself with a brand. And like we were just talking about earlier, it really has to line up with my ideals. And I can be picky now because I guess I just don't really care about the money in the sport anymore. I want to make it better for future moms going forward to be able to get sponsorships. But where I'm at right now, like I just, yeah, it has to make a lot of sense and it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be a ton of money, but yeah.
How did you sort of observe the dream maternity movement as it really kind of took off in 2019? Because it was, you know, really well done and some great, I guess, like, well, some powerful stories really came through from, you know, Alicia Montano, Kara Goucher, Allison Felix coming forward and speaking out against some of these restrictions and like the penalties that they've suffered from past sort of contracts. But again, it kind of goes back to the point that like, had maybe someone had picked up on sort of like your story, like just two years before that,
yeah,
some of these things would have maybe come to light a bit sooner. And I guess like, also just like those are just three huge names within the sport where that star power also did wonders to drive that sport forward. But when the story started coming out, what were some of the reactions you had?
I thought it was wonderful. Like you said, they were high profile athletes. I mean, Allison just like being really transparent about what her contract said. I feel like in our sport, people are pretty secretive about what's in their contracts in general. And then around maternity and, you know, bonuses or pauses in contracts, nobody ever was talking about that stuff. So to get three people on board and all share together and just really bring some transparency to the whole contract process, I thought that was really, really important. And making it mainstream, you know, maternity leave and other issues surrounding that are like we're kind of behind as a country in general in all industries. So to use sport and to use athletes' platforms to bring light to that, I was really excited. I thought it was super, super powerful. Like you said, really well done. And it really kind of caught fire. So, you know, Alicia and I had talked a long time ago when she was pregnant with her first, about how like she wanted to make some changes, and it's so hard. And I was talking to Katie about this too. It's so hard to make those changes or be like procure those changes when you're still living it. And I'm still racing. I'm still running. I still am like doing it. And Alicia is too. And Allison, but like, it's much easier to, I don't know, to do those big cool projects when you're kind of removed from it. So I was just really thankful for them. And I'm really thankful for Alicia starting the And Mother organization and everything, because that's just something that I like don't have the bandwidth for right now, but I wish I could do. And so this is a cool way for me to be part of it and still run and race.
I feel like there's any Instagram post, Alicia's in your comments section as like your number one sort of cheerleader. Yeah, in there.
For sure. For sure.
Can you take us and like peel back a little bit as to like what that friendship is like? When did it sort of start? And like, what is it that outside of running that the two of you talk about?
I mean, lots of motherhood texting back and forth. She and I met probably, I'm trying to think, like, I don't know, post-collegiately, like 2009 at Prefontaine. My oldest daughter, Kiki, came with me and like stayed in the hotel. And I think we met Alicia, at one of the dinners in the hotel. And, you know, we just chatted about how life was different for me than everybody else in that room, and, how I was going to keep going anyway. And then when she was pregnant, I think it was around 2013 or 14 at the US Championships, I saw her there and she was just like, you know, you really inspired this, or you inspire me, and that's why I'm going to keep doing this. So I don't know. It's just been always like a mutual respect thing. And yeah, outside of running, like we have a lot of life stuff in common. She and her husband collaborate on a lot of projects like we do. And they have little ones running around, and she's just really open and honest, which I try to be as well, on social media. So we appreciate that about each other.
So kind of going back to a little bit of the chronology in your career, you made your first world championship team in 2012 for world indoors. So can you take us back? What do you remember about that first Team USA experience? Because this is after baby two, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So I had my second in 2010. So indoors, yeah, it was cool. I think I actually ended up getting third at the race, but Jenny had already announced that she wasn't going to go to Turkey if she won or whatever. So she won. I think Brenda got second. I was third, and I crossed the line and I was like, yes, finally I get a chance to compete on a big world stage, and I'm super excited about it. And it was in Albuquerque, and we celebrated a little bit. My father-in-law was there and my husband, and it was super fun. Turkey was a cool world experience. It was super interesting. I'd never been to that part of the world. And, you know, it was a big stage. It was really neat to experience. Like, I hadn't been in a lot of big races. So it was really neat to experience like track taking center stage and being a big deal.
You take that momentum and then carry it on into that following outdoor season. I think you ran 408 at Oxy that May. Then after that, it's sort of like this is almost, I guess, the period of time that we find ourselves in right now. Then it comes the trials. That one, I mean, you make it to the final, but it doesn't go as well as you had hoped. How did, you know, to kind of bookend sort of like these 4-year cycles, that had to have been like really hard to swallow.
That was really hard. And I think it was the point in my career, well, it was the point in my career where I was like, what I'm doing is not working. So like you said, I had a good couple of rounds. I made it to the final and I completely choked. Like, I felt like I was swimming the last lap. I was last by like, I don't know, 20 seconds or something. It was really rough. And I felt like it was embarrassing. It was like a super public way to just completely blow up. And I know that, like, for me, as a mode of operation, even before I had kids, that kind of tends to be how I do things. Like, I go really hard in a lot of areas of life until I would just crash and burn. And that's just what happened in 2012. We were like, I was taking odd jobs to make ends meet. We had kids. I like refused to give up on running. I tried to take it as seriously as possible. There was a lot of pressure, not external, all me. And yeah, I just imploded. So at that point it was like, yeah, I gotta, like, sponsors not happening, especially after that race, sponsorship's not happening. So I had to figure out like how I was going to restructure running and income and trying to take the pressure off of making money on the track. Cause really that's what it came down to for me, was like, I was trying to make a career and have kids and support them and not be a drain on my family economy. And I just was failing at that. I didn't respond to that type of pressure well.
Because what would you say at that time was what would get someone a contract? Because it's obviously like changed. Like I think around that time, 2012, 2013, on the men's side, like a sub-4 miler out of college most likely could land some sort of like support. On the women's side, what was that like? What do you think constituted her like contract worthiness at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was really close with like 408. I mean, I think I even that year finished like with a top 5 time in the country, or definitely top 10. I mean, I was always like right in that second tier. I mean, of course, making the Olympic team, I assume, would have gotten me a contract. I don't know, or coming close to it. Yeah, I just basically just not blowing up in the final probably would have done it. Who knows? So yeah, I felt like I was on the cusp, but. Like I said, like, I don't know if that would have been what was best for me anyway, because the amount of pressure I had on myself to like succeed on the track and be like dependent on buying groceries or paying for swim lessons, or like, I just didn't like that correlation between performance on the track and ability to take care of my family.
2013 is when you guys made it back to Boulder. How did real estate come into the picture?
My husband's mom was like, oh, you'd be really good at this. Let me pay for you to go to real estate school. And I was like, ew, no, real estate, realtors. But she was a realtor. She had just gotten her license and gotten going. And so I kind of was asking her questions and got really curious about it, and then got my license online, just did the classes and got it done and got licensed. And I think I just like threw myself out there and interviewed at like 11 different places in Boulder until somebody would take me. I was totally unproven and didn't really know what I was doing. So I found somebody who took me under their wing, and yeah, it was a great move. I love real estate now, and I love my clients. I love helping them. I love how it relates to running a little bit. I love that, yeah, it's like a lifestyle thing. And I also love where I live, so it makes it easy to sell Boulder.
Hey, wait, is it true? I think you sold Drew Hunter his house?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yep. No, Drew's one of my favorite clients for sure.
2015, baby number 3. Yeah. How has that come back different than the others? Because I think you've previously said that you had to stop running in the middle of like this pregnancy, right?
Yeah, that one I stopped running a little bit earlier. I just was like super uncomfortable training through that pregnancy. So the comeback was like, actually, I think of all the pregnancies, my motivation after that one was like non-existent. I just could not get any momentum going on my own. I had like mastitis a couple months trying to train, which was a huge bummer and pain to deal with. And I just like had all these different things. And that's when I decided to join Boulder Track Club. I was like, I need somebody to tell me what to do. I was being coached sort of remotely from the coach I had in Portland, but he had felt pretty uncomfortable when I got pregnant, like giving me workouts and like just kind of wanted me to come back on my own until I was ready. And I was not making it happen. So at that point I like looked around Boulder and I was like, oh, Laura Thweet, past college teammate of mine, really good, would make a great teammate, and reached out to them. And they really did like pull me out of a very little fitness and like a low spot and like got me back on track. And yeah, then that was a fun season too.
Then 2016, 7th at the Olympic Trials 1500 final. So it was kind of like after four years later, pretty like without the amazing result would have been to make the Olympic team, but the next closest thing, this feels like pretty sweet redemption after the 2012 trials.
It was a super fun season because I felt like I was just behind the eight ball the whole season. I was like clawing my way back. I should not have made the trials. I think I was like 31st on the descending order list. I did not make the automatic qualifying time after racing. I don't even remember how many times. I just kept barely missing it.
And yeah, I'm looking at the results right now. It was like 417. Well, no, that was the first round, but I think 411 was what you ran. Oh, no, wait, this is 2012, 2016.
Yeah.
So you opened with, well, this is at altitude. So 424 at altitude. And then it was like 413, 411, 410, 426, even at the last meet before the trials.
Yeah. I mean, I think the time was either 409 or 408. Like I just kept missing. And so they take 32. I think I was 31st or 32nd. Like I was barely in, I had to scramble to purchase a plane ticket and find a place to stay. So the whole season, I just felt like grateful to keep going and each step of the way, and like had a great prelim, had a great semifinal, found myself leading for like 1200 meters in the final, which I don't know. I was having a blast. So it was good.
How does that sort of like, when we see a story like Alfien Tuulimaa trying to come back sort of in time for the marathon at the Olympics, you know, she's got an abbreviated runway compared to everyone else who made the Olympic team in February of 2020. For you to have been through this before and being able to return at a higher level sort of each time, what is it that you can kind of like, I'm guessing the marathon's different, but like from the elite athlete's standpoint, what is it that you sort of have learned over the course of, you know, these comebacks?
Yeah, well, I mean, first, I try to be an open book. So anybody like Alfien or anybody else who's having a baby in their career, I hope they can like use me as a resource, because I will just lay it all out there. You know, I don't mind sharing absolutely everything. And I think like the main thing that I learned, and a lot of things took me like four pregnancies to learn, but like really trusting yourself to come back and not rushing it. Like as it relates to training directly, I think the main thing is, like, I could be in shape enough to run some 30-second 200 meters, but it doesn't mean that I was, like, physically sound or put together enough to push those, and that's when injuries happen. So, I don't know, just, like, being really in tune with your body and trusting professionals. I reached out to postpartum pelvic specialists after my fourth, which I'd never really done before, which is silly because we have those resources. So, yeah, just, like, really reaching out to professionals, making sure you're structurally sound before you start hammering away. And I think Alfien's modeling a great job. Like she's really taking her time. She's being really honest about where she is in her fitness, which I super appreciate, because even I haven't shared a lot of that, but like, I think a few weeks ago I posted something like a year ago, I was struggling to run like 9 minute pace on a 4 mile easy run. And at the time it's like super embarrassing, but it's important. It's an important part of the journey that, yeah, sometimes it just takes time and you got to trust yourself.
As a fan of the sport, do you think like whatever it is that she does at the Olympics will even matter? Or like if she if she places fourth or third or, you know, 21st, like do you just see like the fact that her getting to that starting line is a victory in and of itself?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It won't really matter how she places. Like if she goes and competes hard, and I love how she's like, it's more about the journey. I think I love how she's sharing things. So I hope she makes it there healthy, and I hope she enjoys it, because that's her honor. You know, that's what she gets. That's what she's earned. So I hope she just goes there, and I know her being her, she'll get as fit as she possibly can and be competitive as she possibly can. But what I've learned too is like that story about 2012 when I completely blew up, or like other terrible races that still haunt me to this day. I talk to like my people who have followed my career, and they don't remember those. They don't necessarily care that I blew up or had a terrible race. You know, they remember seeing me compete, and that's all. So I think for her, it'll be the same thing. It's super important that she goes and that she shares her journey. I think it's really cool. But yeah, it won't matter how she finishes.
In 2017, that was, you know, kind of the next breakout year that you had within your career. How vividly can you recall that final lap in Sacramento, and just kind of just like the elation and joy that followed. Like, how often do you go back to it just mentally? Because I mean, I don't even know where like to find race videos sometimes. Like it's just sometimes hard to find, but for you, that moment, is it, how often do you tap into it?
Well, yeah, it's seared in my brain. I don't know when the last time I watched it was. I think it pops up like on Facebook or whatever every June. But like, yeah, when I'm struggling in a hard workout and thinking about passing people down the home stretch, you know how when we're doing workouts, or like I've been on the treadmill a lot lately, we all have this like mental image of a track that we like naturally go to. Mine is naturally Sacramento every time, especially the last 200 meters. But yeah, no, I vividly remember the last lap. I remember thinking, like, wow, we're still in a big group and I'm like kind of far back, but I could still see Jenny. Like I could almost reach out and touch her. We were so tightly clumped. Like I wasn't that far off the pace. And then I remembered like, oh, stay patient until the backstretch. And we kind of started to string out and I started to kick a little bit. And I remember coming up on like whoever it was in front of me so fast that I almost had to hit the brakes. And I was like, whoa, okay, like calm down. And then, yeah, I remember my husband with like 120 meters to go. And then that's about all I really remember, just trying to stay on my feet down the home stretch and make sure my body was coordinating as much as well as it could.
So wait, you're saying that after the finish line, there's like a little blackout period?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen lots of pictures and I'm pretty sure, yeah, I'm like a meme on the internet somewhere. So I know what it was like, but like, I don't really remember. I do remember actually thinking, like, I really want to celebrate, but I'm not sure I got third. Like, I got to see it on the board or somebody has to confirm it to me before I make a fool of myself. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, now I can be a fool.
So after that, another baby number four. Mm-hmm. And you then announced this goal in April of 2019 that you wanted to compete at the Olympic trials. That's putting something out there. And I feel like there's different personalities. I'm the type of person that if I start something, like I want to see it through all the way to the very end. Now, are you similar in that sense? Because you put this goal out there. Granted, you did get the benefit of like the pandemic kind of, yeah, giving you some extra time to come back. Yeah. But you're going to see this goal through.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not there yet. I still have to qualify. I still have to do it. But I'm pretty determined. I'm definitely the type of personality that likes to finish things. I know exactly what post you're talking about. And that was actually pretty uncomfortable for me because I usually don't really openly share things, especially that far out. I like to kind of, I don't know, hedge my bets, like see how it goes first, see if that fitness is coming back before I like tell everybody what I'm trying to do. But what I've learned is that, like, especially with my following on social media, it's a lot of runner moms who have big, cool goals that are scary to them and they're scared of failing too. And I think it's more important to show them like what really happens. Like if I do fail or if things don't go perfectly, that's just as important. And I don't think that's what'll happen. But I just want to like share along the way.
Again, it kind of like it annoys me a little bit that just like you gave a sponsor a heads up, like, hey, listen, I'm going to give you this much of a runway, yes, of a journey to follow, and no one's biting. It's so bizarre.
I don't know. If you figure it out, let me know.
So last year, you know, everything gets, you know, canceled, postponed, delayed. How did you sort of take that time to really, now, you know, you didn't have to rush back?
Yeah, I mean, I was rushing back before that. You know, March of last year, I was like kind of panicking. Things weren't clicking quickly. I was trying to take my own advice and not rush it and try to trust the process. But man, I was going for these, like, I remember like the first time I attempted a workout, some mile repeats, and I was like not even breaking 7:30, which is now my like easy run pace. So I just felt so far removed from the athlete that I knew I had to be. And then when they announced like the trials standards, I was like, wow, that's really fast. It's faster than it ever has been, you know, by a couple seconds. And yeah, I just felt like I didn't ever doubt that I could do it. I just knew that it was going to be a really big struggle. I was going to have to race a lot and just really, really dig in. And then as soon as they announced everything was postponed, I took a big breath and went back to the same advice that I give other moms and give myself, and just was like, okay, and now I can really take my time, build a base, trust the process, like just know that that extra year it bought me was a huge saving grace for me.
So where are we at sort of in the lead up to this trials? You competed in Texas, a couple other, you know, smaller sort of like races, but what are some of the things on the checklist that you kind of want to cross off over the next couple weeks?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I've raced a few times, not quite fit or ready to race, but definitely enjoyed those opportunities to put myself out there. I mean, we do repeat a few workouts, a few key workouts. One of them is like 10 by 300 with short rest. I actually did 20 by 300 a couple weeks ago, and probably like on paper, the best workout of my life for sure. I'm going to need to get in a few more long runs. I'm racing tomorrow and then Kansas City, so I probably won't really do a long run until after that. But really it's the speed stuff too. Like I finally had my first real speed session the beginning, like last Tuesday. And that's the part that I was scared about, like thinking, oh, I'm getting older and they just say speed goes away and it's harder and harder. And it's kind of hard to ignore that when like literally every runner I know says that. And I hadn't like broken probably 29 seconds for a 200 in years, like even before this last baby, it had been a while. And I ran some 27s and I ran some fast 300s and I was like, okay, like I still got this. So probably a couple more workouts like that. And then regarding the steeple, like a lot more practice over some barriers. Yeah. Next Saturday will be the first real big test to see how that goes, but might be a little sloppy, but I think the fitness will carry me through.
So you're, as of right now, keeping your options open for 15 or steeple for the trials?
Yeah, the schedule wouldn't allow for any sort of double, but yeah, keeping my options open. Like I said, I still think I can PR in the 1500. Unfortunately, it's so deep, it's so fast that I don't really know where a PR in the 1500 will get me, but I still think I've got it, so.
Yeah, sort of. Where do you sort of assess sort of the changes that the event has had, like within, you know, from you racing in 2012 to when it is now? I feel like in the 1500 specifically, it's sort of, you always have, for a while, it was like Jenny Shannon at the top. And it's like, you just kind of wait and see when they're going to make their move. And then it's a real big battle for the third spot. But then, you know, Shelby comes along and now it's, you know, Shelby Jenny as like right. The 1-2. How do you sort of try to put yourself in the mix? Like, what can you do to put yourself like really in the best position possible for that third sort of spot, even though like nothing's a lock and anything can sort of happen on race day, but mentally, having been around the block and like the veteran of a possible final, how do you sort of assess that, knowing that a Nikki Hiltz or like a Sinclair Johnson, their strength is like the kick?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely just have to sharpen all the tools. Like we've been working heavily on strength work and I've been able to do like these awesome workouts in practice that I've like, that's the part of my fitness that we've really developed over the last couple of years that I felt like was a little bit untapped and where I could still make gains. So like we just really focused on that because that carries you through the rounds and that allows you to use your kick that last lap. So for me, that's been the main focus. And then, yeah, like we were just saying, just working on that speed, making sure I'm sharp and ready to go when the time comes. And then, you know, the last couple of weeks, it's all about the little things. It's about trying to focus on sleep. I'll rely a little more on my colleagues to take over at work for me if I need something. Yeah, just kind of like carving out time or like making my pie chart more running and less other things.
I want to put you in the like the best case hypothetical, which is making the Olympic team, because I just saw this article. I haven't read through the entire thing yet, but it was about the fact that like for the Olympics, it's practically going to be athlete and then like a coach or like their one plus one. And you had this amazing experience in London in 2017 where you were able to bring your whole family to watch you compete. As a mother, like what is it that kind of like you leaving all of that behind must be tough? I'm sure the same exact thing for, you know, fathers and like wanting their sons and sort of like to see them or their daughters. But the article would like had quotes from Allison and like Alex Morgan. And so I'd be kind of curious as to like, how hard would that be for you?
Yeah, I was kind of bummed when I saw that announcement as well, because we've been planning, like, you know, best case scenario, this like amazing family trip to Japan. So, you know, it would be a bummer. At the same time, I've learned over my career, and maybe Allison will learn, you know, in the coming years, that I function a lot better when I do leave my kids at home. So if it's a big deal like the Olympics and I'm going to represent my country, yeah, it would suck not to have them there. But logistically, like, it streamlines things for me. So, you know, they won't come to the trials. I've tried that juggle. And it's just too hard to switch hats that quickly and focus on, I like to pretend to be nothing but a professional athlete for a few days at a time. So that's what I'll do. So I guess, yeah, at the Olympics, we'll just have to go back and visit another time, you know, post pandemic.
Yeah, strictly a business trip, I guess, like for Eugene and then possibly Tokyo. Yeah. All right, I've got the final questions that I ask every guest.
Okay.
First one, what's the meanest thing you've read about yourself on letsrun.com?
I have not gone to letsrun.com for a long, long time. My husband checks it. Brent, what's the meanest thing you've read about me on Let's Run? Brent says there's no mean stuff about me.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I think one time I read that, like, well, because after in 2017, like, every article, every interview was like, mom, realtor, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's all they focused on, which was cool. And also apparently to some people annoying after a while. So I remember someone being like, okay, we get it. She's mom. I don't know. Nothing too mean though.
What's the funniest drug testing story you've got?
Oh my gosh. I've got a lot of funny drug testing stories because my kids, like, I come out of my bedroom carrying a cup of my own urine, and my kids are like, hey mom. And they know our drug testers by name, and they like offer them, you know, half of their breakfast every morning that they come over. So it's all pretty comical. Yeah. I mean, it's all goofy.
That's amazing. Like
normal now.
Yeah. If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, they don't have to be a runner, they don't have to be a real person, assuming they could hold a nice conversational pace with you, where would this run take place and who would it be with?
I think the prettiest place I've ever run in the whole world is Telluride, Colorado. Like, I've been to mountain towns all over the place, and Telluride, I was there a couple summers ago, and it's just like so pristine, and these vistas, they're just beautiful. Hey, re-answer that question. Brent wants me to give a difference. He has a different opinion. Anyway, like, it looks fake when you're there. You're like, I can't believe this place is real. I don't know. I mean, I've always wanted to like pick the brain of Liz McColgan. She was like, I just think like she won a world championships with the 10-month-old, and she was like the OG of mom runners returning to the track. And it's funny because I race her daughter like all the time now. But yeah, probably her. I think she would be pretty fascinating, probably to go get a beer with afterwards too.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a great answer. Last one has nothing to do with running. It's just sort of, you get 25 shots from half court on a basketball court. If you make one, you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
Gosh. Oh. I don't know. Half court. I could granny shot it at 1 in 25, but jail. I don't know. Jail kind of sounds like a nice break, though. I could sleep in. Doesn't have to work. Yeah, I'd take the shots. Take the shots. I'm a risk taker.
I like it. Yeah. I mean, I think some of the athletes have come out, like a Molly Huddle and all that kind of stuff, like they've said they'd take the shot. So yeah. It's interesting the class that you fall into. I'm more of sort of like the price of freedom for me, 25 million, isn't it?
No, I mean, yeah, I agree. 25 million, but yeah, it doesn't sound all that bad.
Sarah, thanks so much for doing this. I will see you kind of in like less than 2 weeks now in Kansas City. I'm looking forward to calling your race.
Yeah, me too. Enjoy your vacation. We'll see you soon.
Apologies for the slight delay in getting the podcast out this week. I decided to take a little bit of a vacation between that interview and when the meet is actually going down. But thanks to Sarah for the awesome chat on sponsorship, steeplechasing, motherhood, and much more. Catch her at the Trials and Miles Kansas City Qualifier this weekend, Saturday, May 1st, on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel. Subscribe to the Sidious Mag newsletter to get all of your running news in your inbox from me. I'm doing my best to get this out to you guys on Monday mornings. I push one out while on vacation, so sign up. It takes less than 5 seconds at sidiousmag.substack.com. Thanks again to Momentous for sponsoring the podcast. They're offering 20% off your first order. I'm going to be using them in training for the next couple weeks. Use code Sidious at checkout when you use livemomentous.com. Big ups to Whoop as the newest sponsor of the Sidious Mag podcast. Go to Whoop, that's WHOOP.com, and enter Sidious at checkout to save 15% off. You can also smash the link that's in the show notes. Sleep better, recover faster, and run faster. Get to the start line healthy with Whoop. That's all I've got. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Legs are feeling good. See you guys on Saturday night.